Bay Hills Community Church is pleased to have you with us as we continue our series, Gods at War, with a small g. We're led in our study by lead pastor David Fossil, who helps us find clarity as we study the Ten Commandments, especially about idolatry. We're reminded that idolatry is anything or person that means more to us than God. As we look at the plagues in Egypt, Pastor Dave shows us that not only was God convincing Pharaoh to let his people go, God was convincing his people that there's no other God worth following.
Go ahead and grab the study guide that's in your program and turn in your Bibles, second book in the Bible, book of Exodus. Go to chapter 7. So you guys are turning there. You may have not read his book, but we all know who Michael Jordan is. Michael Jordan, the greatest basketball player of all time, played for the Bulls, won all kinds of championships. He wrote a book called Driven. And in this book, he tells a story of something that happened with a good friend of his by the name of Fred Whitfield. Fred is not only a friend of his, he went into business with him, been involved in the NBA team that Jordan's a part of now, and so they're really close to one another. Well, apparently, at one point in time, Michael Jordan was at this guy's house, and they were about ready to leave, and Jordan's like, you know, it's cold, I don't have a jacket, would you mind if I went back to your room and just kind of borrowed a jacket? And he's like, no problem, you know my room is, you know, we got that relationship, just go back in the closet, grab whatever you want. Well, what surprised this guy called Fred is that Michael Jordan took like 5-10 minutes. He's like, what's going on? Eventually, Michael Jordan shows up back in the living room holding all kinds of athletic gear, all kinds of jackets and sweatshirts. He even had some shoes and everything, all kinds of athletic gear. All of it, though, Adidas and Puma. No Nike stuff in there. Now, why is that significant? Michael Jordan, if you know, is the primary spokesperson that Nike's had for, what, 20 years, right? He's their primary spokesperson, still to this day. Michael Jordan takes all this other athletic gear, dumps it on the living room floor, then he goes to the kitchen, true story, comes out with a butcher knife, cuts up all that stuff, takes it, goes outside, throws it in the dumpster, comes back, and he says, Fred, you and I are good friends. You and I are business partners. You know my relationship with Nike. And he says this, don't you ever do this again. Don't let me ever catch you wearing this kind of stuff again. Tomorrow morning, you call Nike headquarters, talk to my rep, we'll replace it all for you. And then he said this to him, quote, and this is what I really want you to get. You can't live on the fence. Now, kind of a weird story. I mean, if everyone cut my stuff up, I don't care who they are, Jordan or not, right? But it wonderfully summarizes what we covered last week. If you weren't with us last week, we started a brand new series called Gods at War. It's based upon commandment number one and commandment number two, where God says, I don't want you to have any other gods other than me. And number two, no idols. They go hand in hand. Right? And it's this idea that God says to you, when I go in your closet, I don't want to share that closet with any other gods. I don't want most of that closet. I want all that closet. That's everything we covered last week, basically. You can go back and listen to the podcast, but this whole idea of having other gods, small g in our life, having idols in our life, so many of us think about that only in religious terms. And the big idea last week is that no, idolatry is a modern problem for every single one of us. It's a personal problem. Why? Well, this is idolatry. Let me show you the definition we came up with last week. Idolatry is anytime I value something or someone more than God. How you act, how you live, what you do with your money, what you do with your time. When I value something or someone more than God, when I love something, when I sacrifice, pursue, or give myself to something or someone more than I do to God, that is by biblical definition idolatry. And so the idea, and we started the process last week, we're going to continue it on this week. To be honest with you, it's kind of a heady and heavy subject. Because this is God getting in our faces going, you don't realize, but you might as well have a little idol in your living room. When you value, love, pursue, sacrifice, care about certain things or certain people more than you do for me, that's idolatry. So I'm kind of warning you in advance. We're getting into some stuff that if I do my job properly this morning, we're going to feel a little uncomfortable. Because we're starting to evaluate, well, where are our value systems? What are we doing? Let me show you what we're going to cover this morning. Last week we were in Exodus chapter 20. Next week we're going to go forward in the book of Exodus. But this week we're going backward. And we're going to look at a rather strange thing. If you have your Bibles open, you'll see that in Exodus chapter 7, following all the way through, you know, if you have the little titles there, Moses and Aaron are going before Pharaoh, and then you've got the plague of the blood and the plague of the frogs and the plague of the gnats and all these different plagues. And you know the story. You've watched the movie, the cartoon, the 10 plagues of Egypt, right? Now, we mentioned it ever so briefly last week. We got into it just a little bit. This morning we're going to dive right in because so many of us, when you watch the Prince of Egypt or you read even the story in the Bible, we miss the purpose behind the plagues. This next verse, let's put it up there, shows in Exodus chapter 20 in blue, commandment number one and then commandment number two. But again, we miss what's in red. God, as he sets it up, he says, don't forget I brought you from Egypt. And he's trying to remind them, you know what? I'm speaking to a group of people, the Jewish people, my people. You already believe in Yahweh God. He was giving the Ten Commandments to his people. These are people that have little bumper stickers on their chariots. We believe in Yahweh. God is number one. The Bible of, you know, the God of the Bible is number one. They believe that. Why does he have to tell them no other gods or no idols? Why is that number one and number two for you? It's the first two commands he gives you. Why? Because we have a tendency to do exactly what the Jewish people, God's people in the Old Testament did. Oh, we worship Yahweh God. We follow the God of the Bible until or unless he doesn't quite come through for us the way we want him to. And then, as in Egypt, they would pray to the sun god. Or they would pray to the God of the fertility, or they would pray to the God of the crops, right? In our modern day, we don't pray to those kind of things. We pray to things like the God of materialism. Last week we talked about the God of sexual fulfillment, and we talked about the God of entertainment, and we talked about the God of food, and we talked about the God of drink, and there's all the God of people. Anything you value and love more than God is by very definite, anything can become an idol. Anything can become an idol. And so in introducing the plagues, this is what we miss. Why does God send the plagues? What's the whole purpose? Well, in the story of Moses and in the story of the book of Exodus, the first reason is the most obvious. He's trying to convince Pharaoh, let my people what? Let my people go. The Jewish people are the slaves of the Egyptians. They shouldn't be. Let my people go. And over and over and over and over again, 10 times, I'm going to try and convince you. Let my people go. But the second reason, just as significant, and it's right in Scripture, but we don't see it. We skip right over it. Is God trying to convince you? God trying to convince his very own people. There's no other God worth following other than me. No one else. Did you realize, and you got a simple study Bible, we'll show it, but you can Google it, you can do whatever. Every plague, every single plague, all 10 of them, is God mocking Egyptian gods. Every single one. He goes after all the top 10 gods of that day. And he says, you want to worship him? Watch what I do to your God. You want to worship him? Watch what I do to that God. I'm the only God worth worshiping. Let me just give you a couple very quick examples. Let's put the first one up here. One of the gods that the Egyptians and God's people at times would worship is the God called Heket. He was the fertility God. So if you wanted another kid, or you wanted, you know, we've got a couple boys, now we want a girl, or vice versa, whatever. If you want a kid, you would pray to and sacrifice to and give to Heket, the fertility god. Now Heket, and I have a couple drawings there, images that have been excavated in Egypt. They had a way of describing, showing, and picturing Heket. You see how he's pictured? As a frog. Okay, that's the way they did it, right? Whatever. God says, okay, you want to go there? You want to worship a frog? Okay, let me show you what I'm going to do. Boom, there you go, 5 million frogs. How you like that? And that's, what is it, plague number 3 or 4, whatever that is. And very quickly they realize, oh, we shouldn't mess with the Yahweh, God of the Bible, because he's clearly stronger, bigger, and worthy than Heket. And he says, okay, he moves on. Listen, let me show you another one. There was also a god called the Seth God. There's a bronze image that was excavated of what he looks like. It's almost a modern horror type of movie. You got a couple images of what this god looked like, how they pictured him. He was the god of destruction, the god of violence. He was also the god of disorder. God says, you want disorder? You want me to show you disorder? And he said, he sends plague number 7, the hailstorm, and destroys everything. And they're like, yeah, I guess the Bible God's a lot stronger than Seth. God says, okay, I'm going to keep going down your list. There's another one he goes after. Hathor was the god of beauty and joy. On the left-hand side, you literally have a stone image that was excavated from Egypt and is now in a museum in Europe. You have a couple drawings that are found in pyramids in Egypt. And, okay, kind of strange maybe for our culture, but they pictured the Hathor god as a cow or livestock. That's how they image, how they pictured them. And God's like, you going to worship cows? That's where we're going to go. So he sends plague number 5 and he kills all the livestock in Egypt. What is he trying to do over and over and over and over again? There's only one God worth following. All your other gods, small g, all the idols that you have in your life, they're not worth it. I'm bigger and I'm stronger. I'm the only God worth following. He goes after another god. Let me show you this one. The god Ra, the sun god, a very popular god to the Egyptians. He is pictured, and you see the images on the top right. That is literally a painting that appears in a pyramid. You have a sculpture down here on the left-hand side. What the circle on Ra's head is the sun. So when we were going on vacation to the beach, before we go on vacation, who are we going to pray to? We want to pray to Ra, because when we go to the beach, we want it to be nice and warm and hot, no rain. God's like, really? Okay. So he sends plague number 9 and covers the land with darkness for days. And they're like, oh, shoot. I guess Yahweh God's much bigger, much stronger than Ra. And then finally, the last plague that finally convinces Pharaoh to let the Jewish people, God's people, go, was by far the most difficult one to assimilate and swallow. And, well, he goes after the man god. In the pantheon of gods in the Egyptian system, the top dog, the top god, was Pharaoh. He's the one guy you never messed with. He was literally considered deity. History books tell us that at the time of the Exodus, at the time of Moses and Aaron, in this time of history, Thutmose II was the Pharaoh. His son was going to be Thutmose III. And Thutmose III, his son, would be also considered a god. Until plague number 10. And God says, I don't want to keep doing this, but I will if I have to. You see, there's only one God worth following. All your idols, all your gods, they have nothing on me. And it's until the death of the firstborn, and particularly the death of Pharaoh's son, that he finally gets it. And he finally caves in, and he finally decides, you know what, I can't fight this God of the Bible anymore. God could likewise do the same for us. We have different gods. We have different idols that we elevate, that we worship, that we value, that we love more than the God of the Bible at times. But it's the same message. It's the same message. By the way, there was one loophole to the last plague. One loophole. You want to make sure your firstborn doesn't die? Here's what we're going to do. I'm going to give you an opportunity, says God, to show your faith, your commitment to me. So here's what we're going to do, and this is what he says. Let's put it up on the screen. In Exodus chapter 12, verse 12, on that same night I will pass through Egypt, strike down every firstborn of both people and animals, and I will, now notice, he said it all along. We just don't see it. The whole point of the plagues, at one of the points, is to bring judgment on all the gods, all the idols of Egypt. I'm trying to desperately show you and get through everyone's head. There's no other god. There's no idol worth following. The only one worth following is the God of the Bible. He's the biggest. He's the strongest. He's the only God that matters. Bring judgment on all the gods of Egypt. I am the Lord God. I'm the Lord God. But here's the little deal. You want the loophole? You want to make sure that you don't suffer from this, especially this last devastating plague? Here's what we're going to do. And you read in verse 13, this is what we read. The blood of the Lamb, I put it in there and added it because that's the context of chapter 12. The blood of the Lamb will be a sign for you on the houses where you are. And when I see the blood of the Lamb, I will pass over you. No destructive plague will touch you. So here's the deal, what we're going to do. You're going to sacrifice a lamb. You're going to take the blood of that lamb. You're going to put it on the doorpost right at the entrance of your house. And when the angel of death comes over the land of Egypt, that will be a sign. That will be a faith sign between you and me that you believe me and that you trust me and that you're willing to follow me and that you're willing to live for me. That's our deal. That's our sign. The blood of the lamb. Every once in a while, I have someone say, Pastor, how did they get saved in the Old Testament? I mean, the New Testament, I understand, you know, Jesus, and he died on the cross for my sins. But, you know, in the Old Testament, Jesus wasn't around. And so how did they get saved? It's the same answer. It's never changed. How do people get saved? Old Testament, New Testament, same answer. By faith in the blood of the Lamb. It's the same answer. Here in Exodus chapter 12, they literally would have a sacrifice and by faith in the blood of the Lamb. You read through the book of Leviticus, you read through the entire Old Testament. Every so often they're getting together and they're sacrificing a lamb. And every single time, it's by faith in the blood of the Lamb that I have atonement and forgiveness of sins. Every time. The biggest difference between Old Testament and New Testament is that we didn't all show up with lambs this morning. We're not going to have at the end of a sermon a little quick sacrifice of a lamb. How exciting that would be. You know why? Because the perfect Lamb of God already made the ultimate sacrifice. It's the same answer. By faith in the blood of the Lamb. It's a big deal to God. I'm going to Africa, you guys know, right after service next week, heading to the airport right from second service. I wanted to make this series like 8 weeks, and I thought, I don't know if we can handle it that long. One, two, I'm gone in Africa, but there's so much in Scripture where God says, this is a big deal to me. I need you to be honest with yourself. Have you valued something, loved something, pursued something, sacrificed for something more than you have for me? And if you have, I'm not going to send a plague on you. I need you to clear your closet and make sure there's only my gear's in there. This is why it's such a big deal. If you have your study guide, what I want to walk through with you right now is I'm calling it there the truth about gods or the truth about idols. And there's four things we're going to cover, right? You have them there on the screen. We're going to hit one at a time. And whatever your little idol is, whatever you identify is more valuable to you than God, understand what it's going to do for you at some point in time. The first one, idols will always disappoint us. Jeremiah chapter 10, verse 14. Those who make idols, who have idols, who own idols, value and love things more than God, at some point in time, they're going to be disillusioned because their gods, the gods they make are false and they're lifeless. False and lifeless. Now, I was honest with you last week, and I told you that throughout this series, I'm going to be pretty upfront with you on some of the idols that I've had in my life in the past. I'm not playing games here. I'm serious about what I'm talking about now. There have been times in my life, I've never gone into deep rebellion and walked away from God, but if I'm honest, and I try to be with my faith, there have been times in my life that I valued certain things and certain people more than God. I want to give you a couple examples of them in the context of this. Here's one of them right here. What I do is I buy clothing so that everyone knows what my idols are. Right? I don't know if you do that. Here's one of my favorite idols right there. You see that? The Chicago Cubs, right? Huh? Huh? You know, I was so excited when they won the World Series. Have you ever seen people that their entire emotional state is based upon whether their team won or lost? That might be a little hint. Might be a little hint that you're taking a little too far. I got a couple other idols in here. Silver and black all the way, baby. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Oh, thank you. That's another one of my idols. Okay. A lot of us are on the same page on this one, right? The Warriors, right? We love our Warriors and Steph Curry. My favorite idol by far, though. You could take all of these, put these to the side, and they don't even come close to my last and most favorite idol, represented by this shirt, FC Barcelona. This is the professional soccer team in Barcelona, where I grew up. When I had a special birthday, I grew up in Barcelona. My dad would take me to this game, right? Now, I got to tell you something about this team. Right now, by the way, who's the big rival of FC Barcelona? Do you know? Real Madrid. Now, if you're a Real Madrid fan, what I'm going to need you to do right after the service is please go to the prayer room. We can pray for you and get that off of you, right? Or find another church. No, I'm sorry. That slipped out. That was bad. That was the flesh speaking. I mean it, but I shouldn't say it. But let me get back to this. They have won a lot of games, a lot of tournaments in the last 8 years. And the reason why is they have one of the top players in the world. Some people think that he may be the top of all time. I don't know. But we keep winning. We keep winning all these championships, right? Super champion, super team in the last 8 years. But here's what I know about this team. Here's what I know about every single one of my teams. At some point in time, they're going to lose. At some point in time, Lionel Messi is going to retire. And they're going to lose. And my idols, what I have valued at time in my life more than God, and I love sports. And it's fine to be a sports fan. I'm especially a soccer fanatic. I played at a high level in Europe. And if you're not careful, it can become an idol for you. There's nothing wrong with loving it and being great at it as best as you can. But what we know about our idols is that at some point in time, they're going to disillusion us, right? You know what I know about this idol right here? It's going to take us another 100 years before we win the World Series. I have no qualms about saying that, right? The Giants, you guys win it every 2-3 years. You're spoiled. 100 years. What's your idol? Do you realize that at some point in time, it's going to let you down? It can't give you what God can give you. Can't do it. It'll give it to you in small doses, but then it'll disappoint you. Another thing you need to understand about your idol is that it'll eventually dominate you. It controls you at some point in time. 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 2, before you knew Christ. So we sang the song about power in the name and in the person of Jesus Christ, so that we can get rid of these idols, so they don't have to dominate us anymore. Before you knew Christ, you were controlled by dead idols. And Peter adds, by the way, when you're controlled by something, 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 19, for you are a slave to whatever controls you. There are some of us in this room that know exactly what that feels like, looks like, when it comes to alcohol. Some in this room have literally been controlled and enslaved by booze. But guys, it's not just alcohol. It could be your career. It could be one of these. It could be a person. It could be money. It could be advancement. I mean, it could be almost anything. Anytime you value, love, and pursue something more than you do God, it has the potential at some point in time to dominate you, to control you. You know, there are some of us, when it comes to our favorite gods, and when it comes in the area of sports, we will literally put God on a shelf for 4 months during the fall season because my favorite team is on TV. Or I got season tickets. And we're just so open about it. At least for 4 months out of my life, God's number two, at least. And he controls us. Another thing you need to know about idols is that idols will potentially, they will change us or deform us. Jeremiah chapter 2, verse 5, they followed worthless idols and became worthless themselves. There was an experiment done. And when you read some of these experiments, you go, who are these people? It was a group of scientists, and they wanted to see what would happen to a group of monkeys, a group of chimpanzees, when they were given free and continual access to cocaine. Right? You're wondering, who are these people? But in any case, they would have a little lever, and every time the monkey would pull the lever, he would get a fix of cocaine. Every time he pulled the lever, get a fix of cocaine. Well, it won't surprise you to know that every single one of that first group of chimps and monkeys, every single one very quickly became addicted. to cocaine, every single one overdosed and died, every single one. So they added a new twist to the experiment. Now they decided every time that the monkey pulled the lever, they wouldn't give him cocaine at every pull of the lever. They you know, varied it, you know, and you know, they would have to pull it more than once before they got a hit of cocaine. Then they tried to see how long will it go before they finally give up? Before they stop pulling the lever. Will it take them 100 times to figure out? We're not giving you no more cocaine. Will it take 1,000 times before they stop pulling the lever? How long will it take? They discovered that the average monkey was willing to pull that lever 12,814 times before they stopped pulling the lever. Don't tell me that idols don't deform us and change us. They change who we are as people. And the last one, not all the times, but idols will sometimes destroy us. They destroy us. Psalm 115, verse 8, those who make idols will be like them. So will all who trust in them. Imagine, I couldn't come up with a better illustration than this. Imagine you go to the doctor and you got this really bad cough. We've all had this cough we can't get rid of, right? Seems like it's lasted for 8 weeks. You got this cough, but you go in, you talk to the doctor, they do some tests. The doctor discovers that you have lung cancer. Doesn't tell you. Instead, gives you the strongest and most powerful cough syrup, cough suppressant that's on the market. And so you take the cough syrup, and oh my goodness, I feel a lot better. My cough is gone. I can sleep at night. I'm feeling much better. But without knowing it, what's going on the inside of you? The cancer's eating away at you. You know what I've discovered is that, spiritually speaking, there's a lot of us that are coughing. And the only thing we're doing to deal with it is we're taking cough suppressant. I meet so many Christians that they live their life just doing behavior modification, which is a fancy psychological term where you just focus on behavior. Just change the behavior, right? So I'm an alcoholic. So what I'm going to do is I'm not going to hang out at the bar. You know, I'm not going to be with people who drink or whatever like that. You know, I'm addicted to porn, so I'm going to get an accountability partner. I'm going to put some safety on my computer. And am I against that? No, they're all fine ideas, but let's just call it what it is. It's behavior modification. The issue isn't just your behavior. The issue is what's going on the inside of you. The issue is the cancer called idolatry. Because behind every single sin, there's an idol. There's a choice on my part and your part to value something, to want something, to love something, and I love it so much I'm willing to sacrifice my commitment to God. That's behind every sin. There's an idol somewhere hiding. It's that big of a deal. Part of what we're doing these 3 weeks is I'm doing my best to try and help identify idols for you. And I'm trying to be vulnerable and have a little bit of fun with it, but also be honest about our idols, like I did this morning, right? The way we're organizing it, if you were here last week, let's put this slide up on the screen. We talked about different temples, the temple of power, the temple of pleasure, and the temple of love. It's just a way to organize our thoughts, just a way to identify idols and gods, small g, that you and I may have. And so last week, we talked about next week we're talking about the temple of power. Last week, we talked about the temple of pleasure. So last week, we looked at this. The temple of pleasure has these three things. The god of entertainment, things like this, right? Or TV, or movies, or music, or whatever it is you're into for entertainment, right? We talked about the god of sex. Some people, they're so that sexual fulfillment for them is more important than biblical obedience, right? And so they've chosen that as an idol in their life, as something that they value more than God. We talked about the god of food. Some of us, when we talk about comfort food, we literally mean it. We eat to comfort our soul. We talked about the idol of drink, a little bit of why we drink alcohol. How much do you drink? What's the purpose behind it? It's not sinful, the Bible tells us, but at some point in time, if you allow it to be too important in your life, too valuable in your life, more than God, now we have an issue. So that's what we covered last week. You can listen to the podcast. Here's what we're talking about this week. Let's put it up there. We're going to talk about the temple of love. Sounds exciting, doesn't it? The temple of love, right? There's three gods that live at the temple of love. The God of me, the God of family, and the God of romance. Now, You say, well, how? I don't understand that. I mean, I understood a little bit last week, but what's going on with this? Remember, an idol is any time that you love, value, pursue, and sacrifice more than you do for God. And I'm going to go through this. What I need you to do is be honest with yourself. This is for your benefit. Is it possible that any of these have become an idol for me? Let's hit the first one. The God of me, God says in Ezekiel chapter 28, and what I want you to do is ask yourself, would God say this to me? This is what the sovereign Lord says. In the pride of your heart, you say, I am God. I'm God. There's a little hint that might tell you that you worship and have the idol of me. One's right there, pride. Another one is defensiveness. We're so stuck on our own opinion that we get all bent out of shape when someone doesn't agree with us. And a very subtle one is insecurity. We're so concerned about what some other people think of us. We go all crazy about what do they think about? What do they say about me? Do they like me? Do they not like me? There's all these little subtle ways and subtle hints to discover, do I worship the God of me? God says, in the pride of your heart, you say, I am God. I sit on the throne of a God in the heart of the seas, but you are a mere mortal and not a God, though you think you are as wise as a God. Interesting little study by a psychiatrist at a psychiatry facility in Ypsilanti, Michigan. The doctor's name was Dr. Milton Rokic, and he had three patients that suffered from delusions of grandeur, but they took it a whole lot further. Every single one of these patients believed they were actually Jesus Christ. Have you ever heard of a Messiah complex? That's where it comes from. But they took it to the nth degree. They believed they were the reincarnated Jesus Christ. And so he's trying to help these guys. He's trying to help them understand and face reality and who you are and who you aren't. And so he came up with this idea, and he thought it was a brilliant idea. He decided to take all three of them and have them live together. Have them eat together. Have them go to group counseling together. He thought that might be a way to kind of shake them in their senses and realize you're not God. By his own admission, it was an absolute disaster. The experiment failed, and at the end, every single one of those individuals still believed they were Jesus, and the other two guys were some crazies living at a psychiatric facility. We might chuckle at the story, but there's a lesson for us to be learned there. Some of us haven't figured it out yet. There's only one God, and you're not He. Turn to the person next to you and say in your most serious voice, you're not God. Go ahead and do that real quick. It's going to feel real good. Okay. So the person next to you might not like that. Some of you, you're just too cool to talk to the person next to you. I'm not going to do what the pastor said. You want me to tell you another of my favorite gods? Is the man in the mirror. Have you ever done that? Have you ever loved yourself, valued yourself, taken care of yourself more than God? Come on. It's one of God's top competitors. Here's how it comes across. We're more interested in our personal comfort than in biblical obedience. That's the God of me. We're more interested in personal advancement than in kingdom advancement. That's the God of me. We will read what God has to say about life, and then some of us actually have the gall to think, I think he got that one wrong. I think there's a better way. That's the God of me. We want God to look good. But we're really interested and most interested that we look good, right? I want my body to look good. I want my clothes to look good. I want my hair to look good, right? By the way, last week I got more comments on my haircut than the sermon. I don't know what is going on with you guys. And they weren't all compliments. It was one of these. So you got a haircut? Where'd you get a haircut? You know this about me. I'm very sensitive. So at the end of each service, I need you to either say, we loved your sermon, or Dave, you're a very, very pretty man. So one or the other, it's very important to me to do that. So. Would you be honest with yourself? Have you ever valued, loved yourself more than God? If we're honest, I think we'd be hard-pressed. Every single one of us at some point in time has done that. The next one's weird for us to process. Let me show you what it is. It's the God of family. Say what? Say what? I'm supposed to love my family. I'm supposed to be a godly parent. I mean, doesn't one of the commandments say that I'm supposed to honor my parents? Doesn't it say in the New Testament somewhere? We're supposed to sacrifice and love our wives like Jesus loved the church. What are you telling me? I can't love my family? No, that's not what I'm saying. That's taking it out of context. What God is saying is that if you love them and if you value them more than you do me, now we got a problem. Now we got a problem. And you know, it's amazing. We are open about this idol. Oh, we shout it from the mountaintop. We actually make it sound spiritual and godly. People were asked, who's the most important or what's the most important relationship in your life? Christians. You want to know what they came up with? Let me show you. This is Americans. Let's put this next up there. 37% people said my whole family. 22% said my most important person is my spouse. 17% said children. 3% said parents. 2% said some of my friends. 19, only 1 out of 5 said God. 80% of us openly said my most important relationship is my family. One small problem with this. You've heard the passage in Luke where Jesus says, you want to be my follower? You really want to be my disciple? You got to hate your family. Now, the Jewish word hate didn't literally mean hate as we use the word. It literally meant love less. You need to love them less. So let me show you how the New International Version says it in the book Gospel of Luke chapter 14. If you want to be my disciple, says Jesus, you must, by comparison, hate everyone else. Love them less. You need to love your father and your mother less than me. Your wife and your children less than me. Your brothers and your sisters less than me. Yes, even your own life. You need to love me, value me, pursue me more than any other person. Any other person. Can I tell you the best thing you can do for your spouse? The best thing you can do for your family? Is make God number one in your life. You know what I've discovered? I'm a much better husband when I'm following Jesus 100%. And let me just add this. Have you ever thought about it? Think about the pressure you put on your spouse or your kid or whoever it is in your family when you essentially say to them, you're my God. Think about that. Oh, you may not say it, but the way you live, the way you act, the way you feel... How unreasonable is it for me to say to my wife, Sandy, my personal fulfillment is dependent on you. My personal satisfaction, it's all on you. My personal happiness, it's all on you. You do that, you live that way, that's making someone a god. Don't do that to them. Say, you know what? I love you so much, I'm going to make God, Jesus, number one in my life. You watch what it does to your family. He doesn't want you not to love your family, not to care for your family. He just says, be very, very careful. Don't love, pursue, or sacrifice for something or someone more than you do for me. The last one is one that maybe some of us haven't thought of before, but it's the God of romance. You say, what the heck is the God of romance? Let me explain it to you this way. You know, it's amazing how society, they've sold us an idea. And this is the idea. Falling in love with someone, finding your soulmate, that's the ultimate and the most important thing to strive for. I mean, every other Disney movie, and I'm not getting against Disney movies, I think they're great, but every other Disney movie has this subtle message. The princess will only be happy unless she finds her prince in shining armor. It's that message that's everywhere, right? Music. It's all over music, right? What did the Beatles tell us? All you need is, that's all you need. And they're talking about that. All you need is romantic love. You'll be fine, right? Others have told us that love makes the world go around. Some will even say, I'm addicted to love, right? Meatloaf assures us that he would run to right into hell and back to get some love. He's a little weird, but whatever. Is it just me? Even in Christian circles, we subtly communicate that message. You're single? Well, what's wrong with you? I mean, we gotta... Oh, you don't say that. But we have this subtle thing that we communicate that we gotta get rid of and we gotta drop. Next time you're close to a Christian bookstore, we don't have one in our area, but next time you go to a Christian bookstore, or you can go online, same deal. Punch in or look for Christian books for singles. You want to know what pops up? 75% of what you're going to find in a bookstore is all about how to find a spouse, how to find a mate. Like we've reduced what it means to be a Christian single to, you know, we got to really get you married. One of my favorite titles for Christian singles is this: If Men Are Like Buses, How Can I Catch One? I don't know. It sounds pretty good to me. I'm going to hand that out. Do you guys remember this movie? Let's put this movie up there. You guys remember Jerry Maguire? Okay. It's kind of a chick flick drama, fun movie, you know, very popular movie. There's a couple phrases in that movie that were so popular that they have become part of our common language that we know and use in culture. One of them is show me the money. At the end of the service, when the ushers come down to take the offering, if you listen, they're whispering it under their ears. It's not appropriate, but they say the other one is you complete me. Jerry, right at the end of the movie, he breaks into his house of Renee, what's her face? I can never pronounce her name. Yeah, I don't know how to say it. Don't just leave me alone, right? And she's there with all her girlfriends, right? And he kind of, you know, breaks down and tells her basically, I love you. You complete me. You know what the problem is? We've actually believed that. Show me. Show me where it says that. Because it doesn't. You look to anyone else other than God to complete you, that's called idolatry. Now, give you companionship? Sure. Help refine you? Sure. I'm a better person because Sandy's in my life. I'd like to think she's a better person because I'm in her life. You can help one another. Help you? That's what Genesis 2 says. Sure, all those things are good. Nothing wrong with you saying, you know, someday I'd like to get married. I'd like that. Nothing wrong with that at all. Unless you value that, you pursue that, you want that more than God. I have dear friends of mine. They had the idol or God of romance in their life. It caused them to sacrifice their own values. It caused them to sacrifice what they knew was right and what they knew was wrong. They pursued romantic love to the nth degree, to the point that little by little, step by step, they started going further and further away from God. And they don't sit with us on Sunday morning anymore. You see, that's what any idol can do. Sure. Take care of yourself. Sure. Love your family. Sure, I want to get married someday. But don't let it be an idol in your life. Don't pursue it, care for it, love it more than you do God. A verse, and one of the reasons that I chose to do this series is 2 Kings says this. 2 Kings chapter 17, they worship the Lord. That's you. High five to the person next to you. Yay, that's you. I love Jesus. I worship God. But anytime you see a big butt, you got to pay attention. That didn't come out right. Anytime grammatically, I feel like I'm in junior high youth group here. Anytime there's a word but in the Bible, you have to pay attention. That sounds much better. They worship the Lord, but they also serve their own gods. And we will come and we'll sing praises to Jesus and walk right out that door and go head back to our idols. I'm going to have the band coming up. As they come up, I want to show you what the conclusion is. Here's the summary. Our application, it was the same last week, and it'll be the same next week. Identify your idols and your gods. I'm not trying to guilt you. I'm not trying to jack you up. I'm trying to help you. And until you admit this is an issue for me, you'll never get to bullet point number two, to confess it's wrong. The only God worth following is the God of the Bible. Anything else is called idolatry. To confess it. And finally, to redirect your love and your commitment to God. To redirect your love to God. By the way, if you look at your study guide, I define that as worship. That's what Rick Warren defines worship as. Worship is nothing more than expressing my love to God. When you worship God, you say to Him, I'm committed to you. I love you. That's worship. Last week, by the way, I know I left some of you hanging because we talked about why does God want us to worship Him? Right? Remember we talked about that? Does God need us to worship Him? You know, tell Him how good He is, how smart He is, how strong He is. You know, does He have low self-esteem? What's going on here? Yeah, I'm going to give you the answer to that. We talked about this quote by Friedrich Nietzsche. He's a philosopher and he says, I cannot believe in a God who wants to be praised all the time. Why does God command you to worship? I'm going to give you the answer right now. I don't care if you write it down or not, but I need you to understand and process what's the point of worship. It's not singing songs to warm up before the sermon starts. You're going to see we could spend a whole series on this. Let me show you. One of it is to recalibrate my mind. Have you ever had your car and you're driving, and if you let go of the steering wheel, the car pulls? You've ever had that? You know what's going on. Your tires are out of alignment. And you take it in and they align the tires and the car starts driving straight again. You know, the same thing happens with our minds. What the world does is it takes us in the wrong direction, and what worship does is it aligns the tires of our minds and gets us going straight again, which allows us to do bullet point number two, redirect our path. See, this is what you need to understand. What you think, bullet point number one, impacts how you feel and determines what you do. What you think impacts how you feel, and that determines what you do. The point of worship is to get your brain reprogrammed on what is true and what is right so that you can head down the straight and narrow path. It reminds you of your blessings. What you should be doing, what should be happening during worship, is as you are worshiping God, you're also thanking Him. Thank you for all the good things you've given me, God. Thank you that I didn't walk to church. Thank you that last night I didn't go to bed hungry. Thank you that I got people sitting next to me that care about me. Thank you that I have a job. Thank you that I have my health. Thank you that even if I don't have those things, you're walking through the storm with me. Thank you and thank you and thank you and thank you. And you're reminded of your blessings. Worship done correctly is meant to re-energize your soul. Have you ever shown up to church bummed out? Have you ever shown up to church with a heavy heart? Something's going on and people say, well, how you doing? And you lie real quick. Doing fine. But you're not. And when you go to church, what really blesses you, what really encourages you, it's not the second part of the service, the sermon. It's the first part, the worship. And you have that little moment, that God encounter. You know, my problem's going to still be there when I walk out those doors, but I feel encouraged. And finally, the last thing worship is meant to do is to renew your relationship with God. It's meant every single time you show up to acknowledge, you're right, God, I've got an idol in my life, and I'm sorry, and I'm trying to get rid of that sucker. And I've allowed other gods, small g, in my life. I know you want me to enjoy those, but you never want me to allow them to replace who you are in my life. Today, instead of having a time of reflection, what we're literally going to do is we're going to do just this. We're going to worship God, and it's just going to be for a couple moments, but I want you, as a prayer to God, acknowledge to Him, I've got idols in my life. I'm sorry, and my commitment to you is you're the only God worth following. Only God worth following. You guys want to do that? It's good to smile in church, but it's most important. You don't want to come to church and not have a God moment. This is your moment to acknowledge to God, you're number one in my life. Let's stand.
It's our hope that today's podcast has enriched your life and answered questions you may have had. If you'd like more information about what was said in this podcast or about Bay Hills Community Church, you can reach us on the internet at www.bayhills.net. Bay Hills, located in El Sobrante, California, exists to help everyone take their next step closer to Jesus. Thanks again for listening.